The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew.
Glory to you, Lord.
Jesus told his disciples this parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out at dawn to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with them for the usual daily wage, he sent them into his vineyard. Going out about 9 o'clock, the landowner saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and he said to them, "You too go into my vineyard, and I will give you what is just." So they went off, and he went out again around noon and around 3 o'clock and did likewise. Going out about 5 o'clock, the landowner found others standing around and said to them, "Why do you stand here idle all day?" They answered, "Because no one has hired us." He said to them, "You too go into my vineyard." When it was evening, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Summon the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last and ending with the first." When those who had started about 5 o'clock came and received the usual daily wage, so when the first came, they thought they would receive more. But each of them also got the usual wage. And on receiving it, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, "These last ones worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who bore the day's burden and the heat." He said to one of them in reply, "My friend, I am not cheating you. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what is yours and go. What if I wish to give this last one the same as you? Or am I not free to do as I wish with my own money? Are you envious because I am generous? Thus the last will be first, and the first will be last." The Gospel of the Lord. Caught between two principles. Many ways people grumble at this particular parable because it would appear as if those who've been working all day somehow got cheated. On the one hand, you can maybe relate to them saying that they expected more than those who just worked over just a little over an hour toward the end of the day. But on the other hand, maybe they were kicking themselves. "I could have sat around and done nothing all day and worked for only an hour and gotten the same amount of pay." But they had worked all day, and for them there was no turning back. Some had worked part of the day, and for those there was no turning back. Some had worked just from midday, and for them there was no turning back once they started working in the vineyard itself. And yet, in many ways, the landowner didn't really cheat them. We're all hopefully familiar with this parable. We've heard it enough times. We know the conflict that's involved in it. But do we really pay attention to the details? Because it says, he went out at the beginning of the day to hire laborers. And then after agreeing with them for the usual daily wage. So you get this image of him going out at the beginning of the day and maybe negotiating, bargaining with the laborers. This is kind of like the labor union moment of the parable. He negotiates with them and agrees to the usual daily wage. What happens with the next group going out about 9 o'clock? He saw others standing idle. He says, "You go into my vineyard, and I will give you what is just." It doesn't say they agree to the usual daily wage. This is now on the landowner, who says, "I will give you what is just." It doesn't say they agreed to the usual daily wage. There was no negotiation. This is now in the hands of the landowner. And then with all the other times of the day, all it says is he went out and invited them in to the vineyard. So really the only group he agreed to a particular wage was that first group. How often have we noticed that little detail? And everyone else came in at his invitation. And so he's perfectly just in saying, "I'm not cheating you." At the end of the day, because he says, "Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage?" In other words, it's on the people in the beginning who had agreed to the usual daily wage. Every other group, it's up to the generosity of the landowner. This speaks a lot to the early Catholic Church, the early Christian Church, that had to grapple with the phenomenon of Gentiles embracing the gospel of Christ and coming into the fold of followers of Christ, Christians, alongside and along with Jewish people who also had embraced the gospel and chose to follow Christ as the Messiah, as the Savior. And the question came, what do we do with these Gentiles? Because we Jews have had a tradition that goes back 1,000 years, given to us by Moses. We are God's chosen people. The rest of them are Gentiles. They don't, you know, they wouldn't refer to them as Romans or Greeks or Syrians or Arabians. It's just there's us and then there's the Gentiles. And that was something that the church really had to grapple with in its early decades. And Matthew deals with that as well. Either remembering the words of Jesus in his ministry as an apostle or adjusting them to the particular agenda that he had in addressing this important issue, among other issues that the Gospel of Matthew addressed. But very much the people who came later as to the people who were there from the beginning, the Jewish people who had the covenant from the very, very beginning, and those who came later. It also speaks to the phenomenon of people converting to Christianity later in their life or earlier in their life. And we have in the Gospel today addressing that as well. As a Catholic in the modern era, I can certainly relate to it, as perhaps any of us might, because I say rather jovially, so please don't take it the wrong way. I was raised Catholic. I was born Catholic into a Catholic family that has had Catholicism in it for many, many generations. And of course, being a priest and before that a seminarian that worked with the RCIA and people of different ages coming into the church, I have to tell you folks, to a cradle Catholic, there is nothing more annoying than a convert. Nothing more annoying than a convert. Not for any bad reason, but if you notice, those who come in later on in life have a certain enthusiasm for the faith that cradle Catholics don't necessarily have. Not that we don't have an enthusiasm, but it's a different kind. It's one which they're particularly on fire. And then they're learning a lot of these aspects of their faith later in life in ways that they will remember when many of us who are cradle Catholics grew up with it. It's old hat. If we're lucky, like myself going through the seminary, we might learn some of the depth of that faith, which is why I offer adult faith formation classes in scriptures and currently in liturgy and offer it to people who tend not to come, because us cradle Catholics tend just to take things for granted. We've been doing it all our lives. We don't have to think about it, and yet the converts do. They really have an understanding and an appreciation for it that cradle Catholics don't necessarily have. And we can perhaps see some of the annoyance that, you know, we who've been Catholic all our lives, as opposed to people who have converted maybe the last 5 years of their life or the last 10 years or midlife, and we're all receiving the same reward. We're all receiving the same reward. And to a certain degree, we find ourselves caught between two principles, because regardless of when or how we enter into the faith, once we enter into, there is no turning back. And we are bound by the standards of our faith, not because they're just of our faith, but we have that insight into the humanity that God is calling us to live, the humanity that God created us to be, and the life and the morals and the charity and the outlook, the view we have toward other people that we are called to have as people made in God's image and likeness. And we know it is not always all that easy. And even in the church, in its early history, there were those who would hold off being baptized until they were a little older. Because if you think the standards of Christianity are hard today, try applying it to a Greco-Roman world. Okay? Folks, there's a reason why the word hedonism is a Greek word. And the standards of our faith are very different. And it is a challenge because our own humanity wants to maintain the old ways or the human ways, the ways of the flesh. And our faith calls on us to go beyond that to be people of the Spirit, and we in many ways are caught in the middle between those two standards. And St. Paul even speaks of that in today's second reading, a person of the flesh and a person of the Spirit. He longs to go forth and be with God, but he knows he has a task to do here, where he says, remaining in the flesh to do that work will be of much greater profit, even though I desire to go forward and to go forth and be with God in the Spirit. And in other places he says, in such lines as the flesh is willing and the spirit is weak. You know, we are still in our humanity, but we know once we have embraced that gospel of Christ, there is no turning back. There is no delaying it. And we are in many ways caught between our humanity and the standards that God has called us to. But once we've embraced the standards God has called us to, there is no turning back. And we see that conflict in the story of the laborers in the vineyard. We see Paul speaking of that conflict that he has in being a one who once persecuted but now has embraced the gospel and wishes to go forward to be with Christ, but has a task to do in this life to continue to spread that gospel. But we are all called as those laborers in the vineyard. Sure, we'd love to spend the entire day resting. But as cradle Catholics, got it from the very beginning of our lives. We've had it all our lives, even if we do it as old hat. Hopefully we do take advantage of the opportunities to truly deepen our faith and deepen our understanding of something we've done all our lives as a matter of habit and as a matter of practice. That we embrace those who receive the faith perhaps midway or later in life as converts or people who come to us through the RCIA, and especially people who don't just come into our faith from other Christian denominations, but some who enter Christianity, you know, as is in and through the Catholic faith, but that all of us have the same wage given to us at the end, and that we rejoice to call more and more into that vineyard. It is tempting for us to look perhaps at various standards of people who've been at it longer. We see it in the parish as well. I mean, as a priest, I have to admit, one of the most joyful experiences that are universal to every parish is when a priest is new in a parish. And when you run into people in the parish, you know, they'll tell you, "Hi, Father, I'm Mrs. Jones Smith, and I've been in this parish for 50 years. I was born in this parish, I was baptized here, I went to school here, my kids were raised here, baptized here." I call that padding your parochial resume. I say, "Hi, I'm Father Bill Nicholas, I've been here 2 weeks. Or there are other parishioners. Sometimes I'll ask them, I'll be new, and they'll say, "How long have you been in the parish?" "Oh, we just came a couple months ago. We moved here this summer," the same summer I might have moved into a parish. We can see it in parishes at times and in the life of the church, just as we saw it in the early church between Gentiles and Jewish people who had as their background a grand tradition from centuries before. But the thing we are called to remember is, you know, we have our human standards, but the standards also we have of the gospel in which God calls us to be the humans God intends us to be. And we're caught between those two standards. But once we embrace that gospel, there is no turning back. There is no turning back. And we are called to forsake those human fleshy standards to live always in deference to the gospel of God, to the gospel of Jesus Christ, as laborers in his vineyard, regardless of when we receive that call. Once we receive it, there is no turning back.